Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with East County Magazine and KNSJ, bringing you a special report on the resignation of El Cajon Mayor Mark Lewis. The mayor resigned effective immediately. In his resignation letter, he cited health reasons, including cancer, a dislocated shoulder, and a minor stroke that he suffered in 2010, which he said has caused difficulties in clearly communicating his thoughts. He added that he is stepping down to avoid further concerns by citizens and to allow the city council and community to move forward in their work to make this city the finest place it can be. He added, "I deeply love our town and have given a major portion of my adult life to its well-being, and so this is a bittersweet moment for me." The resignation comes just 2 days after a group of Chaldeans appeared before council to protest what they called racist remarks made by the mayor in an interview published in the Progressive magazine in May. The mayor later apologized for causing offense, but said he is proud of all the city's citizens, especially those within the Chaldean and other immigrant communities, who made the brave choice to leave their homeland and come to America. He said Chaldeans represent an important and respected part of the community. Minorities now constitute the majority of El Cajon's population, including Latinos, African Americans, and Middle Eastern people. An estimated 25,000 to 40,000 Iraqi Chaldean Christians now call the El Cajon region home. Many came here as war refugees, and unemployment among El Cajon Chaldeans is over 60%. The city also has the highest poverty rate in the county at over 28%, although there have been signs of economic improvement in recent months. The mayor's interview with the Progressive included many positive remarks about Chaldeans, but also some comments that have been construed as racially insensitive, including a statement that school children receiving free lunches were being picked up by people driving Mercedes-Benzes. The remark came after Lewis was asked if there was resentment by some citizens against Chaldean refugees. He spoke of drugs as the underbelly in the community and remarked that Chaldeans have made some Mexicans feel intimidated by pushing into their turf selling drugs. In 2011, the FBI broke up a crime ring involving drug smuggling operations tied to an Iraqi organized crime ring and a Mexican drug cartel. Lewis also spoke about male dominance in the Iraqi culture and alluded to prostitution issues involving some Chaldeans. But he praised the Chaldeans overall as, quote, wonderful people, and indicated that like the Vietnamese boat people, there are signs of Iraqi immigrants assimilating into society. They are hardworking, up early in the morning, working late at night, he observed. He noted that they can't return to Iraq due to persecution because they would be killed. He said immigrants who learn to, quote, play by the rules can find that America is a good land for opportunities. Mark Arabo is a Chaldean who heads the Neighborhood Merchants Association. He faulted the mayor for, quote, attacking children and the character of a community. He and others called for the mayor's resignation. Councilman Gary Kendrick told East County Magazine that he believes Arabo had a financial motive since the Neighborhood Merchants Association has opposed the city's new alcohol ordinance, which takes effect soon and restricts alcohol sales at some of the association's member stores. Mayor Lewis has served as mayor in El Cajon for 23 years, and he has overseen many changes in his tenure besides the city's changing demographics. He said he is proud of revitalizations of downtown and economic development that occurred on his watch, and that he looks forward to the new America on Main Street festival recently approved to celebrate cultural diversity. He oversaw consolidation of the city's fire department with La Mesa and Lemon Grove, as well as construction of the new public safety center. He defended a half-cent sales tax increase passed by voters as a good thing in an interview with East County Magazine back in 2010 because he said it prevented layoffs of police and firefighters, and he said public safety should always be a priority. He previously chaired the Public Safety Board for Sandag and is the county's waste management coordinator. He led efforts to make El Cajon the only city in San Diego that is zero waste. Controversies during his tenure included the closure of East County Performing Arts Center, which is set to reopen next year, as well as complaints of cozy relationships with some developers and megachurches. After religious videos were found posted on the city TV website, the city removed them amid complaints that it had violated constitutional requirements for separation of church and state. The city council has not yet announced how Mayor Lewis' replacement will be chosen, though in the past, vacancies have been filled through appointment. Most recently, In 2011, the council filled the vacancy left by the resignation of Gillian Hanson Cox, the councilwoman who later pled guilty to felony charges involving embezzlement of an employer's funds. Historically, vacancies on the All-Republican Council have been filled by planning commissioners in recent years. Karen Marietta, a prominent Democratic activist, is calling for a special election. She said, "We have eminently more qualified Democrats to be mayor of El Cajon." In a letter to party chair Francine Busby, Otter cited former council candidate Ben Colasio, a Chaldean, and Vicky Butcher, an African-American woman who formerly served on the city's planning commission, as potential candidates. Council will discuss how to fill the mayoral vacancy at its next scheduled meeting on November 12th at 3 p.m. Councilman Bill Wells will serve as the interim mayor until the vacancy is filled.
California schools are implementing one of the most comprehensive reforms in 40 years. The local control funding formula changes the way schools are funded and who gets to make the decisions. Samantha Tran with Children Now says this is an important transition year as the state changes the way it sends out resources to school communities throughout the state.
It really makes the system much more rational and transparent and allows local communities to have much greater influence in how they invest dollars for the benefit of kids.
LCFF also includes an historic investment to benefit high-need students, those in lower-income households, English learners, and students in foster care. When fully implemented, this investment will total nearly $10 billion in new funding. Local school districts must navigate the transition to LCFF this year, even though many key details are still undetermined. The State Board of Education will be making important decisions to provide additional direction and guidelines with its next meeting set for early next month.
This is actually a really exciting portion of the law because for the first time, district charter and county office leaders in concert with their community are going to have to describe, you know, what is it we want to accomplish for kids.
Children Now will also soon be producing toolkits and communications for easy use by community leaders and parents throughout the state to understand the formula and get engaged. For Public News Service, I'm Lori Abbott.
The San Diego sheriff seeks public help to find a missing woman who has been seen in Spring Valley, Lemon Grove, and San Diego recently. Sharon Chipman, known as Sherry, is 35 years old. She's been missing since October 10th, when she walked away from her group home in Paradise Hills. She was reported missing by her grandmother on October 12th. Sherry has been diagnosed as bipolar and schizophrenic. Her family is concerned for her safety. She left behind a note that said, "Leaving everything behind, Jesus told me to," her brother, David Chipman, told East County Magazine. Deputies for the San Diego Sheriff's Department talked to her at the Jack in the Box on Hamishaw Road and Sweetwater Road in Spring Valley on October 11th, but she had not been reported missing at the time, and since she did not appear to be a danger to herself or others, she was released at the scene. The sheriff has since issued a missing person bulletin. She also made a banking transaction in Spring Valley on October 11th, and then a week later, on October 18th, her purple mountain bike was found locked to a bicycle rack at a McDonald's near Sweetwater Road and Hamishaw Boulevard. David and his father, Steve Chipman, have come here from Texas to San Diego to hand out flyers. He wants Sharon to know that she has a family that loves her and wants her back. He said there have been sightings of Sherry on the Ocean Beach Pier on Saturday night, as well as in Lemon Grove and Spring Valley. He wants the public to know that because Sherry has not taken her medication, she may be showing signs of erratic behavior. The family wants to resolve the situation. He said, "If she is depressed, if she needs a cell phone, we will do anything we can to make her transition easier. We are here to help her, and she can call her grandma's house, and her family is waiting for her." Sherry weighs 165 pounds, has blonde hair and blue eyes. She was last seen wearing a white top and black pants. There are photos of her and a flyer on our website at eastcountymagazine.org. If you have any information on her whereabouts, please call the San Diego Sheriff Department at area code 858-565-5200.
This is Janice Mork, host of People Power, profiling people and organizations making a positive difference in our community and our world.
This is Janice Mork. I'm here with Kathy Placid, the founder and executive director of the Rocking Horse Ranch in El Cajon. Kathy, can you tell us what's special about the ranch?
The ranch is a real amazing place where we bring in animals, mostly horses, that have been rescued from just any kind of hard life situation, whether it's abuse, neglect. Many of them were sent to slaughter yards and we pair them up with people who are going through hard life situations as well, or recovering from those, whether it's abuse of their own, foster kids, kids with parents in prison, relationship issues. And it's just a really safe, down-to-earth environment where everybody helps everybody, and there's a lot of healing that occurs in that place.
And I understand that one way that you do healing is through equestrian therapy. Can you explain more how that works?
Sure. Equine-assisted growth and learning programs, or equine-assisted psychotherapy, are simply a way to use horses, which are live, large, amazing creatures that mirror and work together with people to help identify in a real experiential way issues that we struggle with in life. And so by working with the horses, people learn boundaries, people learn communication, respect, trust. All sorts of different issues can be addressed in an experiential format, where then you can take that and apply that over to real life situations. So, for example, people in a classroom setting learn a lot by hearing, by watching, but you learn more by actually doing. And the same thing applies to mental health and life situations.
And how long has the ranch been in business?
Oh, goodness. The ranch, I founded the ranch, and it's kind of been a process. I started doing work with horses and people probably 25 years ago. I started with a girl who was blind and was struggling, and paired her up with a horse, and she learned a lot of self-confidence and gave herself permission to try things that she thought were difficult. The ranch as it stands now was actually incorporated as a nonprofit, as a 501c3, about 7 years ago.
Where are the abused kids found?
Oh, goodness. We get kids from all over San Diego County, mostly through referrals, whether it's county agencies, foster programs, group homes. We have churches and schools, individual therapists, some of the Indian reservations. But it's all just through people that have been out to the ranch, seen our programs work, and it does work. And so there's just a lot of word of mouth, and people just get sent out there.
What kind of challenges does the ranch face right now?
We are currently on 2.5 acres, which we are leasing, and that property is up for sale. And so what we're trying to do is raise funds, both monthly donations, pledges from people for the next year, to help support us being able to purchase the property so that the ranch will actually own it and we won't be in jeopardy of having to close our doors.
How do the kids first feel when they see the horses?
You know what? It's kids and adults. It's funny. And sometimes the kids actually are easier with the horses than the adults. Some of them have never even seen a horse before, and so they expect them to be very much like something that would be familiar to them, like a dog. They think that, you know, they'll sit or come like a dog would. Some people are intimidated because they are large animals, and if you've never seen one before, you know, a 1,500-pound animal can be scary. But most people warm up to them really fast and find that once, whether they've been around them before or not, once they spend a little bit of time with them, that they're really, really amazing creatures. And people have a lot of fun and tend to open up and feel really safe with them.
Oh, good. And what are your ambitions for the future?
Right now, we probably reach between 400 and 600 people every month, so several, you know, thousands of people every year, and it's incredible. I would love to be able to grow, to be able to reach more. Like I said, we're on only 2.5 acres right now, which works, and we are reaching a lot of people, but once we secure the property and we can actually own it, I would love to either have a second facility where we can offer more programs or move to a larger facility.
Those sound like nice goals. Has the community stepped forward to help?
We've been really blessed so far. We've just started fundraising just these last few weeks. We just found out that the property was going up for sale, and it's really been touching. We've had little kids doing bake sales to raise money for us, empty out their piggy bank and give us their last $1.10. We've had donors making pledges from around the world, with Switzerland and France, Canada, Germany, and then just a lot of local people. And again, it's been, you know, anything from large donors who are, you know, pledging $500 a month to people who are pledging $5 a month. And so I think when everybody rallies together and we get a lot of people who support a really amazing program that's going on like this, most everything we do, I don't know if I mentioned it, is outreach. And we do charge for some of our services, but we try and reach people who don't necessarily have the means to pay for services themselves. And I think what the community is seeing is that if they all step up, it helps those people that can't take care of themselves. And so it's been really, really neat to watch how everybody has come together to help with the problem and with the programs.
Oh, very nice. And how long did you have to raise the funds for?
We just got an extension because we've been doing so well. We have through the end of November, so just right before Thanksgiving. So it's urgent in the sense that it's just a few weeks, but I feel like it's attainable if through people like yourselves and letting us have airtime and making people aware that there even is such a program.
What other events does the ranch have coming up?
We're hoping to put together a number of fundraisers. We do an open ranch program on Saturdays. If you go on our website, it's rockinghorseranch.org, O-R-G, and there's an event page on there, and it talks about all of our events, open ranch, where people can come and visit and see the facility. And then hopefully we're going to put together some other upcoming fundraiser events, concerts, trail ride, etc.
Cool. This is Janice Mork. I just talked with Kathy Placid, founder and executive director of the Rocking Horse Ranch. The story about this ranch is now posted online at www.eastcountymagazine.org. Thank you, Kathy.
Thanks, Janice.
Welcome to Destination East County with your host, Ariel Johansson, bringing you the most exciting festivals, events, and attractions each week. This week's activities are full of Halloween and harvest fun, desert days, and spooky nights. The 48th annual Borrego Days Desert Festival is a free weekend event beginning on Friday, October 25th from 5 to 9 p.m. and continues through Sunday, October 27th from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. in Borrego Springs. The event offers family entertainment, a Saturday parade, artists, retail and food vendor booths, and the sounds of live entertainment floating through the desert air. This is the last weekend for the Campo Depot Museum's 2013 Pumpkin Express in its 10th year at the Great Pumpkin event at the museum. Travel to the Great Pumpkin's Pumpkin Patch and tour the Haunted Train, where kids can pick out and decorate their own pumpkin. The trains are popular and seating is limited, so reservations are required. Trains leave at 10 a.m., 12:15 p.m., and 2:30 p.m., on Saturday and Sunday only. The museum at the Campo Depot on State Highway 94 and Forest Gate Road recommends that riders arrive in Campo at least 45 minutes before their departure time, especially if they haven't been to Campo before. The Boo Parade, or Boulevard Boo Parade, is returning to the college area of San Diego on Saturday morning, October 26th, beginning at 10 a.m., The parade gets underway at 59th Street, travels east along El Cajon Boulevard, crosses College Avenue, and concludes at Aragon Drive. This free family event is bigger and spookier than ever. More floats, more zombies, more music, and more surprises. Most of what makes the Boulevard Boo Parade San Diego's only Halloween parade. The fun doesn't stop after the parade. There are places to discover in the college area, and you can take the family to the Ray and Joan Kroc Center for the annual Boo Bash, located just minutes from the parade on University Avenue. The Boo Bash takes place from 1 to 4. While there, enjoy trick-or-treating, carnival games, pumpkin decorating, arts and crafts, and more. The Heritage of the Americas Museum invites guests to its annual Museum Roadshow on Saturday, October 26th, from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Museum Roadshow is an opportunity to bring in a treasure and have Craig Helm, a certified appraiser and authenticator, tell you what he knows about it and how much it might be worth. Craig specializes in Native American and pre-Columbian artifacts, antique pictures, Western memorabilia, and Asian artifacts. Call the museum for more information and check their website at www.cuyamaca.edu/museum for more info. The Heritage of the Americas Museum is located on the campus of Cuyamaca College in the Rancho San Diego area of El Cajon. The second annual Haunt Fest in El Cajon will be held on Friday, October 25th from 5 p.m. to 10 p.m. and is located at East Main Street and Rea Avenue in El Cajon. Guests can enjoy live bands on multiple stages, a downtown walk, a juried art show at the Olaf Weghorst Museum, costume contests for both kids and adults, a haunted house, carnival rides for the kids, food, crafts, stations, and more. Families are invited to spend an evening at the Water Conservation Garden with Ms. Smarty Pants and her creepy crawly animal friends on Friday, October 25th from 6 to 8 p.m. as kids trick-or-treat their way through the garden by the light of the moon and their own flashlights at this free family event. Kids are encouraged to wear their costumes. Also available will be juice and snacks, baddie crafts for kids, and of course the flashlight trick-or-treating throughout the garden. The garden, or the Water Conservation Garden, is located at Cuyamaca College on Cuyamaca College Drive West in Rancho San Diego. Henry Clay Elementary PTA Fall Festival takes place on Friday, October 25th from 5 to 7 p.m. A magic show will be performed from 5:30 to 6:30 p.m. and the costume contest will be held at 6:45. Guests are encouraged to bring donated baked goods for the cakewalk. Henry Clay Elementary School is located on Salida Avenue in San Diego. The Charlie Brown Children's Center Annual Fall Festival features food, games, a bounce house, silent auction, cakewalk, and pie toss. The festival gets ghoulish from 6 to 8 p.m. on Friday, October 25th. There is no charge for participation, and the festival is a community service of the United Church of Christ of La Mesa, located on Jackson Drive in La Mesa. Campo Community Center Spook and Funhouse will be in full effect on Friday, October 25th. This spooky event, toned down for the little kids, takes place at the Campo Community Center in Campo. The hours are 6 to 9 p.m., and the Campo Community Center is located on Sheraton Road in Campo, California. Commemoration of the 2003 Cedar Fire will take place October 26th from 1 to 4 p.m. at the Crest Clubhouse in Crest. October 26th is the 10th anniversary of the 2003 fires. The CCA is planning to mark the occasion with a commemorative event that will bring the community together to share their experience, thank those who helped Crest get back on its feet, and to learn how to be more prepared for any natural disaster. The clubhouse will be open from 1 to 4 with a tree planting ceremony at 3 p.m. Light refreshments will be served and information tables from the Fire Safe Council, Kiwanis, CCA, and Noah's Wish will be available. Kids are invited to display artwork and essays describing how the fires affected them, including any good that came out of this unfortunate experience. There will also be a Cedar Fire Remembrance Day in Lakeside at the Lakeside River Park Fire Station No. 2 on Saturday, October 26th from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. There will be guest speakers, presenters, and a remembrance ceremony. The Lakeside River Park Fire Station is located on Lakeside Avenue in Lakeside. Enjoy a spooky camp sleepover at Lions, Tigers, and Bears on Friday, October 26th and Saturday, October 27th. Guests can gaze at the stars and listen to the majestic sounds of the big animals. Campers provide the tent, breakfast, and dinner, and Lions, Tigers, and Bears provides the s'mores. Please reserve your space. A costume contest will be held on the morning of Saturday, October 26th. In addition, a pumpkin bash will be held at Lions, Tigers, and Bears on Saturday, October 26th. This event is for members, members for a day, and spooky sleepover guests. It begins at 9 a.m. At this crazy annual event, staff and guests stuff pumpkins with meat for the big cats and fruits and vegetables for the bears. Then they watch the wild animals savor these tempting once-a-year Halloween treats. The Mission Trails Regional Park annual family-friendly Halloween Spooktacular takes place on Saturday, October 26th. This third annual Spooktacular will be presented by renowned storytellers Cynthia Griffin and Mary Holma from 6:30 to 8 p.m. in the Mission Trails Regional Park Amphitheater next to the Visitor Center. Children are encouraged to come in costume, and each child will receive a bag of Halloween treats. Guests can gather around the outdoor amphitheater and listen to spellbinding tales under the stars. The family-friendly Spooktacular Tales features delightfully frightful stories, ranging from the barely scary to the deliciously shivery. This free program offers Halloween fun for all ages, sponsored by Team Northcutt Realtors. Mission Trails Regional Park Amphitheater is located at 1 Father Juniper Serra Trail in the San Carlos area of San Diego. Palomar Mountain State Park's third annual Apple Festival takes place Sunday, October 27th, from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. with free admission. Did you know that the park has apple trees planted by homesteading pioneers over 100 years ago and that they're still producing delicious apples to this day? Come spend the day at the park to enjoy food, music, games, arts and crafts with an apple harvest theme, and enjoy free apple goodies to eat, free access to the state park, and free parking. Listeners can check out East County Magazine's Spooktacular Guide to Halloween and Harvest Fun online at www.eastcountymagazine.org. Our guide includes local pumpkin patches, Halloween events, and harvest festivals throughout our inland region. Now for a preview of some fun activities next week that may require planning or ticket purchases or are ongoing. The first two events have a Halloween theme. The Old Poway Ghost Walk is an opportunity to wander through Old Poway Park after dark and hear family-friendly spooky stories at every turn. This event takes place on Monday evening, October 28th. Put on by Storytellers of San Diego, the event begins at the fountain in Old Poway Park in Poway, where guests are asked to meet with their flashlights at 6 p.m. Old Poway Park is located on Midland Road in Poway. Lakeside's third annual trick-or-treat on Main Avenue, M-A-I-N-E, takes place on Halloween night next Thursday, October 31st, from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. for trick-or-treating among local businesses. There will be princesses and queens from the Miss Lakeside pageant passing out candy to children ages 0 to 10. This event is sponsored by the Lakeside Miss Teen pageant. Plant Stravaganza takes place at the Water Conservation Garden on Saturday, November 2nd. The Fall Plant Stravaganza starts at 9 a.m. and goes till 3 p.m. and will help San Diegans make the most of the region's fall to spring planting season and save water while doing it. Retailers and growers will sell shrubs, trees, perennials, succulents, and more. This year, visitors can preview a newly constructed exhibit, the Dorcas E. Utter Butterfly Pavilion, which is scheduled to come alive with butterflies in early spring 2014. Team Butterfly will be on hand to answer the public's questions about how to create a butterfly garden. The Rancho San Diego Farmers Market, located near the garden, features organic produce and specialty food booths and will be open during the fall plant extravaganza. Plus, visitors can pick up holiday gifts in the garden's gift shop. The next event is a bocce ball tournament with a potluck and wine tasting. Now that the harvest is over at Campo Creek Vineyards, it's time to kick back and have some fun. Bill Clark at Campo Creek Vineyards will be hosting the second annual bocce ball tournament at Campo Creek Vineyards on Saturday, November 9th. The club will supply hamburgers, sausages, rolls, utensils, condiments, soda, and water. Local wine will be available for the guests' enjoyment. Guests are asked to bring side dishes or desserts. The California Art Club and Olaf Wighorst Museum are hosting a juried art show that began on October 8th and will run through January 11th, 2014, at the Olaf Wighorst Museum downtown El Cajon location on Rhea Avenue. Two guest lecturers will be featured during the show. On Thursday, November 14th at 7 p.m., Mark Fellman will speak on capturing San Diego's nature, 100 years of landscape painting. And on Thursday, December 5th at 7 p.m., Ross Provance will reminisce about the life and art of El Cajon's most famous Western artist, Danish-born Olaf Wighorst. The Wighorst Museum is open Tuesday through Saturday from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. and will also be open at the El Cajon Haunt Fest that night. The Olaf Wighorst Museum in downtown El Cajon is also presenting a champagne luncheon and festive Chinese auction on Thursday, November 9th, from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Guests can celebrate the holidays at the museum at this event, which includes a sit-down luncheon at 12:15. This event requires an RSVP. All of these activities and more can be found in our festivals and events section and on our calendar and in our spooktacular guide at www.eastcountymagazine.org. See you around, East County!
You're listening to East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio
89.1 FM Descanso.
The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. We are here today to talk about highway hazards in Hamul and along the 94 corridor, which is seeing a lot of traffic growth out there. My guest today is Debbie Hornsby, who is a longtime Hamul resident, active member of the Kiwanis Club. Welcome to the show, Debbie.
Thank you, Miriam.
How long have you lived in Hamul?
Since 1990.
And what brought you out there originally?
The rural atmosphere. We wanted to raise our children in the country.
Mm-hmm. And what was traffic like along Highway 94 back then?
When we first bought our property in 1987, we sometimes would come down and not see a single car all the way from where is now the TGI Fridays, where mm-hmm. you turn right, all the way up Honey Springs to Bratton Valley Road.
Wow.
Not a single car.
And it's certainly changed a lot with housing developments coming in and the shopping center down there as you go into Rancho San Diego and a high school, some other things, and now an Indian casino is proposed. So tell me a little bit about what's been happening just this week with traffic. I understand Caltrans is doing some repaving and there's been some delays.
Yes, there's a minimum of 15-minute delays. They're closing, having only one lane open, either way, all the way from the 7-Eleven to, I believe, past Del Zura.
And when did you find out about this?
When I got in the traffic and had a 15-minute delay one day about a week ago.
Yeah. A lot of people complained that there was no advance notification. Caltrans has actually sent an apology letter to residents saying, we're sorry we forgot to tell you about this, even though they knew about it for a long time.
And this road resurfacing is expected to go on through the end of this year.
But that's not the only problem. There's actually been many fatality accidents out there in recent years. We have a chart on our site, and you can take a look at that. Recently, they had a truck that broke down, and that caused something like a 52-hour period where it was stuck, and there were very long delays. Some people complained about, you know, half an hour. How concerned are you, Debbie, about the impact these sorts of delays could have on evacuations if a wildfire were to happen in your community?
Very concerned. There's a limited amount of entrances to Hamul. You either go 94 or you go up Steel Canyon Road or Hamul Drive.
Mm-hmm.
And you have a 15-minute delay or an accident can back you up in traffic all the way down to Rancho San Diego.
Yeah, so a long time if you're
it's
trying
ridiculous
to beat a wildfire or even a medical emergency where someone's trying to get someone to a hospital. Now, the high school itself has put more traffic pressure. Steel Canyon High School, how does that impact the traffic when school is starting up or letting out each day?
Well, I find it very difficult if I have to travel that way at school time. Traffic is backed up all the way to 7-Eleven at Steel Canyon intersection, mm-hmm. going westbound, and all the way down to TGI Fridays going eastbound. That wasn't there when we first moved there, and our kids did attend there because mm-hmm. it was there.
So time-wise, how long is the delay for trying to get past that area where the high school is on 94?
It can be anywhere from 10 to 15 minutes. Mm-hmm. You stop several times for the stoplight there.
Now, the Hamul Indian Tribe is proposing a casino. How many more cars would that put on the highway?
They're estimating 9,000 per day.
9,000 per day in an area where you already have 15-minute delays before and after school.
Yes.
Accidents much longer. What is the community's view? I mean, is there a general consensus among people about the traffic, about what can be done, or is there any mitigation in your mind that could make that acceptable to you?
Not really. Mm-hmm. The Indian tribe has these proposals to make improvements at a couple intersections and widen the road in a couple places. Mm-hmm. But in my opinion, that is not enough.
Now, you mentioned you've seen some accidents right where you live or where your business is there.
Yes, we own the office building next to the post office on Highway 94, about mm-hmm. maybe a quarter mile from where the proposed casino is.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen a car get rear-ended that was turning into our parking lot and pushed over the curb into the front yard.
Wow.
Because the car came around the corner of Simpson's Nursery too fast and just slammed right into her. And then a car was passing someone illegally in the turn lane in the center of the road going east westbound. And they took out our water line that's in the parkway.
A lot of inconvenience then. Now, there is also talk about or plans to expand one of the border crossings down there to make it a crossing where trucks carrying oversized loads would be able to go across the border there in Otay, I believe it is. And that is going to bring even more traffic, you know, large trucks carrying heavy loads, oversized loads. Are you concerned that this could exacerbate the problems as well?
Definitely. For a short time, they had the Tecate border open to big trucks mm-hmm. until they realized that the trucks over 40 feet were crossing the yellow line on curves.
Mm-hmm.
And they couldn't improve the road due to the topography. So they finally stopped them.
Yeah. Back to the casino for a moment. There was a meeting that Caltrans held with residents. And how did that go?
I wasn't too impressed. There was nobody to speak to there. All we could do was leave comments in a little box.
So there was nobody to answer questions or...
They only had the representatives from the tribe, I believe, there, mm-hmm. that I knew of.
And yet, the governor's office just recently issued a letter, a top aide to the governor, stating that he supports the tribe's mitigation plans and that he'd had many meetings with the tribe and with Caltrans, and even came down and had a site visit right here in Hamul with those folks present, and yet not the community members. What was the community response to that?
Not pleasurable.
Mm-hmm. They've accused them of closed-door meetings, basically.
Yes, and not holding the Indian village to the same standards that the general population would have to go through in order to do something like they're doing.
Yeah, they're on sovereign land, so they do have certain tribal sovereign rights, but nonetheless, when there are impacts off reservation, that's where Caltrans come in, and they're supposed to make sure that if a project gets approved, that these impacts can be mitigated. You can't just throw something out there and say we're going to create something dangerous and not mitigate.
Right.
Do you believe that since Caltrans and the governor's office was courteous enough to meet with the tribe and meet with the developer to hear their concerns, that they should also meet with the community to hear your side of the story?
Yes, they do need to meet with us. Just sending letters, you know, we don't know if we're getting any real look into the situation.
Yeah. Now, there's also a concern out there with a lack of notification, I understand, when an emergency does occur. How effective are alerts from, you know, the sheriff, the fire departments out there, in letting you know when there's a fire, when there is a major road blockage from an accident, and so forth?
Personally, I don't ever hear about it. If there's a fire, I see the smoke.
Mm-hmm.
That's my first notification. Or the antler alerts, deerhornvalley.net is very good about notifying. They have a big network where, you know, people call in and
A community online newspaper, deerhornvalley.net, and they actually send out alerts when an emergency happens. I certainly rely on them to get a lot of information down in that area because, like you, we're not hearing about it from official sources. We've asked the sheriff, can they make a scanner channel available? That doesn't seem to be one. If any listener out there knows how we can hear a scanner channel for that area to hear police activity or fire activity, please let us know. There are scanner channels available. You can hear what's going on with these emergency officials and agencies in all the other parts of the county, but that little southeast part of the county from Hamul east toward Hakumba just seems to be a dead zone. It is not up there, and we could not find out what's going on, and neither can the residents, which is really a critical problem when there's a wildfire, correct?
Yes.
Now, you not only deal with the emergencies on this side of the border, but there's a lot of Mexican fires as well, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So when a fire occurs in Mexico, do you get any notice about that when there's smoke everywhere?
Not really.
Yeah. So what are some sites that you recommend where people can go to if they want more information about emergency notification. Let's repeat that one. And also, if they would like to get more information about the community efforts involving the casino.
Well, for the alerts, www.deerhornvalley.net. You can sign up for the antler alerts, mm-hmm. where you get text messages or emails for things that are happening, emergencies, and just anything going on in the mm-hmm. neighborhood. And then www.jachamul.com is the website for the Hamulians Against Casino. And they have a full spectrum of all the history since the 1990s
yeah.
concerning the casino and what's going on.
As well as a lot of information on the traffic issues there, too, and, that I've yes. seen as a helpful resource. And for those who want to hear the tribe's side of the story, first of all, we'd certainly welcome a tribal representative to come on the show and tell their side if they want to. But you can Google the Hamul Indian Village, and they have a lot of documents there. You can get the arguments from the tribe's point of view there as well. Debbie, I want to thank you for coming on the show today, sharing these concerns. I hope that some things can be done to make things safer and certainly improve the notification for people when traffic and other emergencies do occur out there.
Thank you.
Okay.
This is a public service announcement from the nonprofit East County Magazine regarding the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service. During a wildfire, it's critical to receive timely news about evacuations, shelters, threatened communities, and other vital information. Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are available free to the public via email, or you can receive the alerts via Twitter on your mobile phone. You can get information on how to sign up for these free alerts at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation.
Welcome to Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read. My name is Raina Menashe, and I'll be your host for this segment. Today I'm interviewing award-winning writer Marnie Friedman. My guest wears many hats in the field of literary arts. She is a playwright, screenwriter, ghostwriter, magazine writer, blogger, and workshop teacher. Welcome, Marnie. It's a pleasure having you here in the studio with me.
Thank you. It's wonderful to be here.
Let's start with your experience writing plays and films. I know that Playing with Mona Lisa was made into a Disney film. Tell us a little about that journey from the USC School of Filmic Writing to seeing an actual movie made of your work.
Well, it's a very complicated and messy process, but basically it was made into a play in Los Angeles, and that received some pretty good reviews, and it was based on a period in my life where I was dumped, and I was just looking at how funny it was, how down in the dumps I was, and I started to write about that and what it's like to be a young writer in Los Angeles, which is just kind of getting swallowed up in the sea of muck,
right,
for lack of a better word. And piece by piece, we decided we would put it together and try to do it ourselves. And then one thing led to another. It sounds so much smoother saying it like this, but it took years of insane tenacity for it to finally meet its home, which it ended up that Disney took it on. And we got some wonderful actors. We got Elliot Gould and Marlo Thomas.
Wow.
And Johnny Galecki and just Harvey Fierstein, some people that I really admired and loved. And it was amazing to watch it come out.
And so how did you keep yourself going through, you said it took years. What kept you motivated, inspired?
I have this thing where, do you know that machine where you get bopped down and you keep popping back up? The
right.
whack-a-mole, that's what
right.
it is. I kind of liken myself to a whack-a-mole. Like, I just keep popping back up somehow.
That's a good trait.
I think that's kind of what you need to do,
uh-huh.
Especially when you find a piece that you really love that says something that you really want to say, then you have that belief inside of you that it's worth sticking out through all the crap that you have to go through.
Wow, it sounds like you have the right attitude. You've also worked as a script doctor for Fox Searchlight, Disney, and other film companies, and you've worked as a script agent for the Mary Sue Seymour Agency. What's it like being a script or book doctor as opposed to just focusing on your work, your something that you love?
Well, it kind of goes back to your last question. That's one of the ways that I survived was, you know, I discovered that I was able to help other people. I figured out I was very resistant to plot for quite a long time. Mm. And once I embraced that you actually needed structure, I was able to help other writers with their structure. And I was also a dialogue specialist. It was just one of the weird things that came to me. So that was one of the ways that I was able to make a living. But it also, it was like an honor to help other writers mm-hmm. try to tell their stories. It was the beginning, I think, of what I do now as a writing coach.
Right. So that leads to my next question, which is about ghostwriting. It's an interesting term. It means the person in the spotlight is someone else writing while you, the ghost, is hidden in the background. Well, no, you're doing the writing and the other person has the spotlight, excuse me. So how has that affected your work, being the ghost in the background? Has that added to your tool of skills in writing and teaching?
Yes, and it stinks. I mean, I was writing for a series of how-to books, and the first time I'd never done it before, and someone offered me the job, and I said sure. And then looking at the book that's in the bookshelf, and you see the guy wrote why I wrote this book, and it was the most frustrating thing because it was like, you didn't write the book, dude.
Exactly.
So it has an element of being stinky. So I try not to do that. But if it's someone that really has an important story to tell and they just don't have that as their skill set, then it's, again, it becomes an honor to help that come to fruition.
I see. Then you become that person's voice.
Yes. You know what? The word voice, I think, is so much about what I'm supposed to do on the planet. I know that might sound kind of weird, but helping people to find their voice. So when I'm ghostwriting and it's actually allowing them to say something that they really want to say, like I'm working on somebody's memoir right now, mm-hmm. There's something incredibly inspiring about helping them to get, you know, to do something they wouldn't be able to do and put a message out there.
Okay. I know that you teach writing workshops at San Diego Writers, Inc. in the UCSD Extension and that you run three popular writing groups, the San Diego Screenwriters Group, the Monthly Memoir Club, and the North County Writers Circle. And you're also a therapist for writers and artists. We know we need therapists. In your opinion, how does teaching really make a difference? I mean, not just to your students, but the writing community, like running these groups. How does that add to the community?
Well, I kind of have a passion for, when I first came out to San Diego, I realized we were all really separate. And, you know, sometimes in San Diego, it's very hard to be connected. And I started the San Diego Writers Network newsletter because I was traveling all around the county to, you know, from one group to the other, workshop to the other, but everyone feels very alone.
Right.
Often writers feel very alone. And there's something really magical that happens when a group comes together and they really want success for each other, something very nurturing. And it's wonderful to be able to facilitate that for people. And then just having the training as a therapist, a lot of times, like in my monthly memoir group, that's the first Saturday at Writers, Inc. Of the month. It helps with, you know, because sometimes with memoirists, they're traveling to really hard places. Mm-hmm. And so the therapeutic training kind of helps them to be safe and to actually go there and get their material out in a safe environment.
It seems like a really good marriage, if you will, the therapy and the...
It's weird. I didn't plan it. Mm-hmm. I feel like I kind of fell backwards into it, but it feels very much like what I was always supposed to be doing. I don't know if you've ever experienced this, but when you feel like you're really in the right place at the right time. And so I finally feel like that. I was like, I was almost in the right place, almost in the right place. And now...
You're in the right place.
Yeah.
And so I hear that San Diego Writers Inc. is having some events in October.
They have a conference, actually. It starts on the 25th of October, and it runs to the 27th. And it's fairly inexpensive. It's a great way to get introduced into the community of San Diego Writers Inc. On the 27th, I will be teaching a class in characterization. And another wonderful event that's coming up this in October, the 25th to the 27th, is San Diego Writers Circle is going to be performing their first annual one-act plays. And that's in conjunction with the Horrible Imaginings Film Festival. And that's at the Digital Gym in North Park. And that would be the 27th and the 28th at 7 p.m. So if you want to either come learn about craft or you want to support local artists, a couple of really awesome things are going on this weekend.
So the names of those two events are?
The San Diego Writers, Inc. Fall for Writing Conference.
Mm-hmm.
So if you Google San Diego Writers, Inc., it'll pop up. And,
right.
It's nine classes you can take for something like $100,
mm-hmm.
and from top-notch instructors. And then the other one is called Darkness Unwound, and that's the series of spooky one acts that's at the Digital Gym.
Okay. Yeah. Well, good information out there. One last question. You're now busy editing your first online literary journal, The Literary Vine, nice name,
thanks,
and finishing your first book, The Seven Essential Writing Tools. Where can we find this journal, and when will your book become available?
The book should become available in January, if all goes well, but nothing has gone exactly according to plan.
Of course.
I've had to learn to a lot of patience throughout this whole process. And if you go to my website, www.thewriterinyou.org, hopefully we'll be announcing when that is coming out. And the literary journal we're kind of taking a slow track, meaning the best material. So we're just accumulating, for the Literary Vine, we're accumulating some amazing material. So we kind of want to keep the call out there. So if there's any people that write short stories or even excerpts from books that want to submit, we're happy to look at those as well.
Oh, keeping an eye out for those things.
Yeah.
Well, Marnie, our time is up, but thank you again for joining us.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate being here.
For more information on Marnie Friedman and her work, please visit her website, again, at www.thewriterinyou.org. This is Raina Menashe, and you have been listening to East County Magazine's Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read.
Why are so many pets becoming ill after eating pet jerky treats? The Food and Drug Administration is asking that question, and they're seeking help from veterinarians and pet owners to track down the exact cause of an illness that has now sickened over 3,600 pets and killed more than 500 across the United States. The ingredients come from China, but the problem is that some of the pet jerky products made in the United States are not labeled and are not required to be labeled with where the project's ingredients originated. So for now, the FDA is advising people to use caution and avoid pet jerky treats until further notice.
This is Connie Beck with Ready, Set, Grow. I'm going to help you create healthy and beautiful gardens using less money, less hard work, and much more fun. It's time to start planting for this fall, and that means you need your tools to be in good shape. So how exactly do we keep our tools in good shape? Well, for one thing, we don't leave them laying out in the rain, if it ever rains again, and we don't want to put them away dirty with mud on them and dirt on them. We want everything to be cleaned up and put in a proper place inside the garage, the basement, or a tool shed of some sort. One of the cute ideas that some of my students like is buying an old used mailbox at a garage sale and posting that someplace in their garden so they can have a second set of tools or even a third one out there to grab when they see something they need to do, and that way they don't have to go all the way back to the house to get the right tool, and it is out of the way. Now, how do we clean these tools when we're through with them? Well, obviously, you can hose off your shovels, rakes, hose, things like that.
I have a trick that I learned years ago that I really enjoy, and I think it's wonderful. And even my husband, who's not quite as hyper attuned to cleaning tools as I am, likes this one. We take an old cat litter box, and we fill it with sand and pour a quart of motor oil into it, stir it up real well, and we can slide the shovels, the rakes, and everything into that box and get a light coating of oil on the tools before we hang them up. This also has the benefit of taking the small nicks and scrapes off the edges of the tools before you put it away. Sometimes we have wooden handle tools. I love wooden handle tools. They're much better than fiberglass as far as I'm concerned. How do you keep those wooden handles nice? That's the job for a little bit of sandpaper sometimes, and then coat them about once a year with boiled linseed oil. You can also use mineral oil. You can also use expensive olive oil. The point is, you're using an oil on these wooden handles at least once a year to keep them smooth and working well. When you are using your tools for pruning outside, your loppers, your hand pruners and everything, they have a tendency to get gummy. They get all sorts of sap on them. There's an expensive product out there that you can buy that'll remove that, but you can also remove the sap and the gumminess on the blades of your tools with alcohol, just plain rubbing alcohol on a rag. Rub it onto the gicky stuff on the edges of the tools, and then leave it for 3 or 4 minutes. And then when you come back, you can use that same rag and just wipe them off totally clean. There is also a tiny tool out there. It costs about $10 or $12. Look for it, and you will find it. It is a gardening tool sharpener, which you run over the blades of your loppers and your hand pruners, your bypass tools, and it will clean them. And it will sharpen them again instantly. 3 passes and you're good. It is not the same as a knife sharpener, so don't buy a knife sharpener and think that's going to work. What other tools do we need to take care of? Well, you need to take care of your hands. So for that, I recommend you get some really good gloves. Gloves that are fabric that have a vinyl dipped fingers and hands and palms are absolutely great. They last longer than you think they will. Sometimes at one of the big box stores, you can buy a package of 6 or 8 pairs of these for about $1 a pair. They're worth their weight in gold. They'll keep your hands from feeling like, as my husband once said to me, holding hands with you is like holding hands with a pineapple. You can avoid that by wearing gloves when you do your gardening. And then I want to say a kind and loving word towards your favorite item that you need here where we water every week, and that is your garden hoses. Garden hoses should never be stowed with kinks in them. That destroys the hose in record time. Also, when the hoses are stretched out and you're using them, don't step on them. You may think that it's not going to do any harm, but it will, because small rocks can poke a hole in the side of your expensive garden hose, faster even in your cheaper garden hoses. So don't do that. Be kind to your garden hoses. Coil them up nicely with no kinks and put them away after each use.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the San Diego Performance Academy for the use of their studio, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jules, Brian Boykel, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. We also thank the County of San Diego for a community enhancement grant to support our Destination East County segment. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.